could be whatever you like, but touching your own feet, touching your own head in a way that's sensuous. And when you start loving and living in that way, you become so much more radiant and so much more attractive to everybody else around you, including maybe yourself. That's the biggest game in town, is how do you fall in love with yourself?
Hey, welcome to U-Turns. This is the podcast where we talk about all things change. I'm Lisa Oz.
And I am Jill Herzig. And, you know, as we've talked to various different guests on this podcast, I feel like one theme comes up again and again, which is the importance and the power of meditation. I have taken so many pieces of advice that I've gotten from our guests, and I must have some sort of a block. This is the one thing. And I know you meditate.
Well,
but
I cannot
get myself to do
at all in any form.
Well, no, I mean, there's no point in my not being honest here, right? Well,
which is why I have our guest today.
Yes, we're getting help. I'm getting help.
Well, our guest today is Donna DeCruz. She is literally the queen of meditation. She is probably the coolest meditator I've ever known and makes it easy, and anyone can do it with her technique. Donna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's lovely to be here with the double L's.
Tell me a little bit about your journey to meditation, through meditation, with meditation.
It's a ride, you know, Lisa, and I hear you loud and clear. I think my journey is, I was born in South India, so I come from Tamil Nadu. And so there's a certain vibration and a frequency, I think, that sort of permeates where you are born. And so I'm born in a place of India that is full of ancient mystics and yogis, but it's also a place that actually deeply has delved into this idea of self-realization. And it's something that I don't think we're even used to understanding what that means. So I come from that place. I was educated in Australia. And meditation and TM was actually my first specific sort of introduction to it. And as a kid, I would sit. I had this cousin that came and lived with us and stayed with us. And he was a meditator. And he'd gone on a wobbly road. And suddenly he was now this meditator. All I knew was he wore fierce white clothes. And I would sit outside his room while he closed the door and did I didn't know what. So I was like, what are you doing in there? You know, as only a precocious kid did. And what I discovered and what I felt was whenever he would come out of this room, he would see me cross-legged, sitting very peacefully. And I just had this feeling that it was something I had to know about. So at age 17, I demanded, I was like, here's what's happening, family. We're all going to meditate. At which time my father rolled up his eyes and said, I'll see you in the garden, dear. And mom and
I love that this was your form of teen rebellion. Yeah. This is a very healthy teen rebellion.
No, we're doing this. We're doing this. I was just convinced. And anyway, I went down my own shaking path down the road of what is this mantra? What is meditation? And eventually I came to understand that it's very easy. And, you know, and to Lisa's point, I think we've sort of walked down this road of worshipping the struggle, worshipping, you know, what is difficult. And my path in consciousness, and I think we have to be unabashed to actually say, it's actually consciousness, how we eat, how we love, how we live, how we walk, how we talk, how we engage with the world through all of the senses is actually with awareness. And if there's a job in the path of meditation, it's to actually open that doorway to self-awareness, right? And so it really just means to reflect upon, to look upon. So what I would love to do is actually be that sort of gatekeeper that busts down the myth of the struggle around it and say, if you can breathe, you can do it. There's no rules in it, you know, and that's the thing. The greatest teachers I've actually had are the people that I serve in the recovery space. So I have a weekly that I've been doing it at a place called Phoenix House, which is America's oldest drug and alcohol recovery facility. And now I work at another spot called Education Alliance, where we look at the whole ecosystem around sober living, which is really very interesting, very disruptive, and hugely efficacious. And my service there is really about getting them to quieten down the mind, to turn chaos and confusion into something else. And it's a transcendent journey. It's not like you just automatically you know, sit cross-legged in a state of bliss. You have to go through your own path of what's uncomfortable, what you want to hold back on, what you want to let go of. And I think it's just very, very easy, which is why we use music. I've sculpted the experiences that I've created using music because, as you know, Lisa, like music, to see her on the dance floor, hello. You know, it's actually revelatory.
Only it tells when you're spinning, Donna. Donna's also a DJ, I forgot to mention that.
Well, I use music, you know, that's the kind of world that I've chosen to pull from because I know music has infinite power, right? Mm-hmm. Genre bending, beyond time and space, who cares? Just get out there and shake it. And so I use music in the meditation process because it has helped enormously in the recovery space to take that monkey mind and bring it down to a place of, let's just say dialing it down, right? Yeah. To, you know, to a place of quiet.
So when you're working with people in recovery, are the meditations different? Do you feel like you sense a different energy from those people? Do you guide them differently? Or is it really just, is meditation? Whomever is practicing
yes.
And whatever they're looking for?
You know, everybody, I think, whether you are in the space of recovery, whether you're a CEO, whether you're a model, whether you're a mom, whether you're a truck driver.
Because you've actually led meditation
yeah,
with all those kinds
all
of people.
All of them.
The
yes.
entire spectrum.
The full spectrum, because I see it as one thing, and it's called the human being, right? Not the human doing, and that's the idea is, you know, that I think we all have more than a memory of our own perfection. We all know that we're kind of amazing, yet the lie that we have been led and the deceit has been around, we've got to struggle, we've got to earn love, you've got to earn peace, you've got to earn a place in society, you've got to earn. And I think if there's anything that's going on in this shift, whatever that means to you, there is something going on here that is saying, listen, knowledge is for everybody. There is a great democracy now around knowledge. You know, if there's anything around technology that it's affording us, it is, listen, check it out, learn, go, whether you're talking to your doctor, whether you're talking to, you know, your financial expert, whether you're talking to yourself or your kids, you have a right to dig in there. And that's part of the journey of self-discovery, isn't it? Is to go and do a bit of work and don't look for what the parts are that are difficult. Look for the things that you love that are easy for you. And that's what I do in the space of, actually, I don't even call it meditation. We call it a dip into bliss because I think we all have a well of bliss available to us. And when we just shut down and shut up, we tune into it. It's always there. It's the witness. Eckhart Tolle, you know, the divine presence. Whatever your belief system is, when you shut up the noise, something else is always with us.
Mm. I love how simple you make meditation and don't put any rules around it. Like, you don't have to do it for an extended period of time. What I was really impressed with was you had 1 minute meditations. I loved that. For a while, Donna was saying just 1 minute meditation, which even you could do, Jill.
Yeah, even someone like me who bizarrely rebels against this.
I find the music helps significantly because it's when it's just you and nothing to focus on other than a mantra. The monkey mind is much harder to tame. If you throw the monkey the bone of music, so to speak, then you can sort of quiet everything else.
Absolutely. Well, there's a, you know, the example when I work with kids, like I work at the Lower East Side Girls Club, and there are girls there who are some of my favorites from 6 to 17 years old, and they are just at that beautiful formative time in life. And one of the lessons that I've taught them is when an elephant comes into a village, there's a great story that says that if it's hurt or if it's frustrated or if it's looking for its young one, it will come through that village thrashing around and cause absolute havoc, similarly to the mind. When it's given a piece of wood, it curls its trunk around it and gets very quiet because it now has an intention and has a purpose. Mm. So similarly, the mind, when given a mantra, right, the mind shuts down. At least it starts getting quiet. And that's really the purpose of the mantra, is to help the mind be distracted.
And
right?
Is that so what the music does as well?
It does. I think if we were to actually collect data and science around it, we'd see that it would probably do a lot more, because mantra can actually quieten down the mind, but the music can also help with breath. The music can also help with then impacts heart, which impacts blood pressure, etc. So there's a physiological response as well that I think we might elicit through music. But I don't really, you know, I don't really care so much about the science. I care, like Maya Angelou says, who cares about what I have said and what I do? I care about how we make people feel. Mm. And the greatest litmus test for me has been in that space of recovery, when someone's got so much noise and so much trauma that they might be dealing with. If we can give them, like Lisa said, even if it's a minute of self-awareness, it's a minute where they've now tuned into their breath frequency, they're now maybe looking at themselves with a little bit more kindness, a little bit more compassion, a little bit more self-understanding. And that is how we can shift our own individual consciousness, which is then connected to the collective consciousness. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, self-compassion and self-understanding are so important if you're trying to work change into your life, whether you're working on getting sober or you're working on a U-turn of any kind. And I think that is why it does keep coming up in this podcast. And now you're making me very determined.
Yeah, and we'll make it super easy for you. Like, yeah. You're obviously breathing and you're obviously present. So it's super easy. You can do it in 30 seconds. You can do it in 20 seconds. You know, you can do it in that moment when you're about, like, on my way here, getting cranky with my driver and the traffic and everything. And I was like, well, it's that. And or not. So I can now be irritated and choose to be in a place of irritation and be annoyed and feel all my, you know, yuckiness going on. Or I can say, okay, I'm going to be okay. No one died. No one's bleeding. And I'm okay.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk about your new form of meditation.
Yes.
Before the break, we were talking about meditation and making it easy with meditation expert and founder of Rasa Living, Donna DeCruz. And now I want to just touch on her most recent endeavor, which is meditations. It's a solution for sleep.
Yes.
Can you explain that to us?
Well, a lot of the people that I've been serving in, as I say, you know, from Wall Street to Palo Alto and down the street, in the last 2 years, I just started asking people, how's your spirit? How are you doing? How are you sleeping? And I became really alarmed when increasingly younger people, especially younger women, started to tell me about some of the stuff they were taking. Some of it was, meds, legal and not, and some of them were around self-journeying, drugs that people are into at the moment. And I said, so if you're taking 3, 4, 5 things to get to sleep, it begs the question, what are you taking to stay awake and what are you taking to get up in the morning? And so I went on this very interesting journey. I started asking more people and then I started collecting data. And when I realized, as CDC said, 30% of us have sought medical attention for sleep deprivation. I was like, that is cuckoo to me. So I very simply, you know, and my dad always says, I don't want to hear your complaining, Donna, unless you have a creative response. And my creative response was, so let's create around this. So I know the space of music. I know the space of meditation. Let's combine them. So I really just combined those
two
things. You
also happen to be gifted with the world's most wonderful voice.
thank you.
Just such a delight for all of us.
We all have gifts. We all have our gifts. The only question is, how will you serve and how do you want to use them? So, and, you know, I have never told people this. It's a good way to, good place to tell you, but I grew up actually a terrible stammerer. I had stuttered and stammered, and it was really, really paralyzing, I'll say. And I would pray that things weren't given to me, gifts were not given. Please don't make me the school captain. Please don't make me, you know, please make it something else. And so I lived
most of
my life. So I wouldn't have to speak. I went to speech therapy and did all sorts of things. And it's weirdly a wonderful and very, very strange when I hear people say your voice, because of course the child in you goes, oh really? Oh, here it comes. You know, now we've dealt with it, and I talk to it all the time because I've decided to love it, and that it can give service and comfort and solace to people is just a great, great joy to me. So I hear that. So that, you know, that's just a little sidebar. But but to combine music and the actual project is called Sleep Meditations, and it's got, you know, I threw a lot of science in it and a lot of modern context because people like ASMR. Even Dr. Oz Mehmet was saying, oh, ASMR is so big, Donna, it's really giving people great self. So it has ASMR, it has a certain frequency called solfeggio, which is a really, the solfeggio frequency we've all heard when we've gone to ancient places or to churches or synagogues, and we hear this, that certain codex in music that makes you feel like, I think I can sing like an angel, or I think I feel something. You feel that sense of elevation. So those codes have been written into music to make us feel in an ascendant and a descendant manner, troubled, alarmed, as well as elevated and uplifted. So it's very specific. So we have that in it. And we also have probably the most important thing. It's also been done with binaural dummy heads. So it sounds like it's, you know, in left and right. The most important thing that we put in it is breath entrainment. And where we've taken the breath from 15 and 16 breath cycles per minute, which is usually around this hyperactivity and this sort of hypervigilant way that we live, down to 6 breaths per cycle per minute. So we change the whole breath so that as you're listening to it, whether you know how to meditate or not, because I will always assume that there's more than a handful of people who have never done it, don't want to do it, probably will never do it.
Yeah.
So that's okay, but you are breathing, so we can change your breath. And we can take you from a place of panic and anxiety and maybe even help some of the folks that are taking the stuff that is robbing people of dreams and dream states we know is so important to a place where maybe they can just dial into breath.
Well, I have used it the past several nights.
So I haven't used it. Do you have to wear earphones?
No.
Can you just put your iPhone on and play it?
And what's so cool about it is it lasts all night long. So if you're a person who has trouble falling asleep, you've got a 12-minute meditation for that where I hear you talking to me. But then you can also go into a whole 7-hour cycle, which doesn't have your voice, but has all of these, I had no idea until you just told me what it has, but it's a brew of sort of soothing, healing components.
Right. Oh, you're using it beautifully. That sounds just right.
And my husband is a waker-upper in the middle of the night.
Yes.
And you know, so that's happened, and it's still going on. It doesn't ever drop you. It holds you.
That's right. And the idea is, and I'm so pleased to hear it, because that's exactly, you know, there are two versions of it. One with, let's call it guidance, right? So there are the first 12 minutes, because that's that first 12 minutes when you're getting into bed where you start, the anxiety process can be a real issue for people, like stuff that's gone on during the day, et cetera, et cetera. So we actually prepare you for sleep. And then you can choose to have the guidance, you know, throughout the night. And it's done in 6, 7, and 8 hour cycles. And then there's another version of it that's exquisitely done without music, right? So it gives you that journey. We've also got power naps, which go for 5 minutes or 8 minutes, because I'm finding that a lot of people, they're at work, they're about to freak out, something, you know, crappy's happening. So then you dial into that. So use it. The idea is use it as you need to. Go to the loo, close the door, take that 5 minutes instead of coming back with aggression or something that's going to get you into a pickle later. Take a breath and take a beat and use your own inner light.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I heard you say to me last night as I was falling asleep, this is so weird, honestly, was, and I don't remember your exact words, but basically, like, the day is over, you've done what you can do, you can't do anymore. And the first time I heard it, I actually felt a little bit of agita around it, because I have the world's most persistent finisher's complex, and of course, you're never done until you're really done.
But that probably makes you great at many things, at what you have
done.
Yeah,
but it's a driver. It's a taskmaster. It's like an internal engine that's a little merciless. And the second time I heard it, I thought, that's right. We're done with this day. We just are. I'll pick this up tomorrow. And it's interesting, especially when you're going through a transition, a time of change, you've got to push hard. You've got to push yourself hard to go into places that are kind of scary. But then there's a certain point where you just have to stop and say, done. And it was kind of wonderful.
That sounds like you have a convert over there.
That's great. Yeah.
I didn't, maybe I was meditating. I just didn't realize it.
Well, it is. I think, you know, part of this sort of overall deceit, I think, in consciousness are the rules. You're supposed to do this however many times a day, and you're supposed to do that however. I think we can do it all the time, and living in a place of whatever is comfortable awareness for you. And to your point, you know, part of that other deceit is, especially as women, I hear this lament from a lot of the younger women that I work with. I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to accomplish that. You know, I have this intention. I have that goal. And part of it is that we live so far in the future that we forget how to just enjoy this. And in this, there's actually no fear. There's no discomfort. There's no anxiety. And the joy, if we were really to drill down into the space of consciousness where meditation lives, is you're not in the past where you've got your grief or your sorrow, and you're not in the future where you've got your fear and anxiety. You're here right now, and you're amazing, you know. And the idea of the story gets broken, that inner story that we tell ourselves, that gets fractured right in the present moment, because you're not in the past, you're not in the future, and you're celebrating the fact that you're kind of amazing, and that you did these things, and that you create, you inspire others. We're not very good at telling ourselves that story. We're more easily inclined to listen to what is critical and what is the stuff that makes us, because we're used to that story. We're like, yeah, as opposed to I'm amazing. And I think the shift that we're seeing in consciousness is, whether we think of it as the age of Aquarius, or whether we just think that this is part of, out of our discomfort comes great awareness and earning and making our way through that is part of it. I think it's releasing all of those old stories and understanding, you know what, I'm actually going to demand amazing food and find out where I can get it. I'm going to do the same for my water. I'm going to do the same for my air. I'm going to do the same for the relationships that uplift me, as opposed to the ones that make me feel uncomfortable and don't serve me.
You mentioned dreams and consciousness, and I think I see a connection between what you do with meditation and these sleep meditations, because there's something I think you talked about all the medication people have been taking to get to sleep and to wake up. You can't dream productively when you're on those sleeping pills. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's something about a dream state that takes us, that deals with our unconscious, the way that meditation deals with our unconscious. So the integration of what you do is really, it's the mistress of the unconscious.
Lisa, I love it. Well, that's actually, I think that's the secret. You know, I think that if there's one thing that we've really done beautifully in the sleep meditations is, when you look at the stages of sleep and you look at, like in Sanskrit, you know, we call it the awakening state. The doing state is called Jagrat. The second state, which is the dreaming state, is called Swapna. And then there's the other state, which is called, whether you call it Samadhi, but let's call it the dreamless state. And we've traditionally measured and looked at how important the dreaming state is, right? Because that's where we exercise fantasies, we exercise our frustrations, we work through our stuff. And we can flit in and out of that as we do throughout the night. What we've done, I think, although it wasn't really the intention, but I think it's happening, is in the dreamless state, to your point, am I in a state of meditation? What's going on? We're able to widen that and deepen that. And that means where we actually are, I think, changing and expanding slow wave sleep. That's the part we want to get to. That's the part that has no recollection of body, no mind, no ego, no fear, no, nothing. It's cosmic. So, it really is. You go into a state of samadhi, there's a lot of discussions that I'm having. And I think when we're looking at what is going on with our technology today, and even by the, you said, so how do I use it? Do I just put it on and put my iPhone on? On, yes, your technology's on all the time. We're on all the time. We don't know what off is. And the idea here is to actually more fully examine and treat us to the off, you know, the unbounded part, right? The part beyond time and space, the part that, like I said, no mind, no ego, no nothing. It's heaven.
When we come back, we're going to dip more into heaven with Donna DeCruz. Before the break, we were talking with Donna DeCruz about the heaven of a good night's sleep. Now I want to talk about the bliss that is Donna's life when she's not sleeping. I want to talk about some of the U-turns in your life where you've so many things with the DJing and being the sensualista, which, the most sensuous person. Just talk to us a little bit about, because everything you do, by the way, is a celebration. And nothing is without joy. You walk into a room and you bring clouds of joy. So talk to us a little bit about those other aspects of your life.
Yeah, all your transformations.
Yes.
It seems like you're still transforming. You're always transforming.
Totally. Every day. I think every day I wake up that way. I go to sleep that day. I struggle like everybody else. But I've tried to dial down on the noise and the things that are not serving me and celebrate what I think can actually shift me and shift the people around me. But, you know, I came to America with $300 and two telephone numbers. That was probably my biggest U-turn. But having grown up in Australia in my 20s, mm-hmm. you know, I came, I grew up in, I was born in India, came to Australia, and I just had this feeling, much to my family's chagrin, that it wasn't for me to live my life, you know, and stay in Australia. I loved it. I loved the land. I loved the culture. Fell in love with the Aboriginal people, and I'm inspired by that. I felt like I wanted to be in New York and I wanted to expand and do anything. And if there's one thing about the consciousness and the psyche of America is, and especially in New York City, is like it dares you to dream. And it also will support your dreams if you're willing to engage with it, with her. I always think of her as a her. So that was the biggest turning point in my life when everybody else thought I was a mad person and said, what are you doing? What are you thinking? It was beyond thinking. I just knew it in the viscera of me that I was going to do that. And I do it all the time.
How did you become a DJ? So typically a man's world, especially when you were first getting into it.
Well, I worked. I have a record label, and it's a label that it's called Rasa Music, and we really explore culture and consciousness. And we've worked with Deepak and many, many artists around the years. And, you know, we've worked. I remember when we did the Rumi project, a lot of people were like, what is, isn't this Muslim music? What is that you're doing? Even some of the biggest publications thought it was highly questionable. And I said, this is not just the sweet face of Islam. This, listen to what he's saying. If I love myself, I love you. He's talking about the oneness.
Just for our listeners, describe what the Rumi project was.
Well, it's called A Gift of Love. And it was really a Valentine to Rumi, because Rumi, I think of all of the mystics, was the one, and, you know, certainly he has been a great guide in my life. But I think as a beyond the, you know, he's a metaphysical poet. He existed in the 13th century, and he was the one that said, if I love myself, I love you. I am God. God is me. It is one thing. And it's all of that is then in the Vedanta and the Vedas and in many of the wisdom traditions, all that idea of us being one, of us being connected to breath and that breath being the same for all is very much echoed in the work of Rumi. And I, you know, I just became a fan. And so we got a bunch of very famous people who had known Deepak and were still friends with him, from Rosa Parks to Demi Moore to Madonna, Martin Sheen, to read a piece of poetry, which we then married with music. And it is really, really powerful and beautiful. And so then we did the same thing with the Tagore project. But all of the, you know, I knew that world of music. I have an encyclopedic knowledge around certain types of music, around world music specifically, and chill out music and that sort of vibe. And one day I was at an event for Billboard magazine, and Jelly Bean Benitez, who ended up discovering Madonna, asked me if I knew, you know, I was describing this music, and I said, oh, I love this music that's playing. She, you know, it's a Brazilian samba beat, but the woman's singing in French. I love that twist. And he's like, well, how do you know about that? And I said, well, I own the license. And he said, do you know how to DJ? And I was like, yes, even though I was just potting around at home, but I taught myself, and I just played from the heart, and I play very eclectically. I play music that is a lot of, I'll play, you know, Uma Sumac and something that's like mystical and magical, as well as hardcore dance music. And I've played around the world and from many, many strange, wonderful, weird, beautiful places. And so I do that because I think it shifts consciousness. When you move your body, when you actually get, it's another, you know, it's another form of meditation. Look at the Mevlevis from Turkey.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Rumi, those whirling dervishes, right hand to the divine, left hand through the heart axis into the ground, and they twirl to the right. And it's just one of the most mystical, magical, transcendent things you've ever seen. Mm. It's really something else. So I've been a fan of dance, and where dance and music and humanity intersect has always fascinated me. So that's where my DJ work has sort of spun out of that. And I have blinged out headphones.
Swarovski.
Yes.
Covered.
Yes, yes, yes.
Headphones. Yes, they are fantastic. They are.
Well, I did that really specifically because I wanted people, I was like, I'm not a Harry Potter DJ under the steps. So I was like, and I've got black hair, so I need to have some situation.
Well, and maybe to sort of say, this is not a space right. that men own.
No.
Hello.
It was not purposeful. And I find it very funny because, you know, when I first started, a lot of media would ask me those questions, like, what does it feel like? And I said, it feels like I have no idea what you're talking about. Let's talk about music and let's talk about how I create that music and how, and my label and all the other things that are important to me. Because when you talk about my sexuality, that's so minimizing. It's so banal.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not, and it lessens the time that we have to talk about what's important, which is music.
But I will say that we've talked about this as well. You are a very sexual and sensual person, and it's a big part of your identity. Now, when we talk about identity, it's different than what we're talking about now. I think that you bring the sense of eros, the erotic, into everything you do. From the oils, you have a routine with scented oils.
You have such a good memory.
No, you do. I've always been so in awe of the way that you bring that bigger sense of, when we talk, other than, you know, when you say, I don't want to talk about sexual identity, who you are at your core has a lot of that erotic energy in it.
I like it. I like to think of it as a sensuousness. And to me, that means connecting to your senses and using your senses to elevate and expand your own existence in this earthly plane, as well as, I think, connecting you to other realms, right, and other sheaths of consciousness. And, you know, we think of those senses in the five realms, right, as we like to call, you know, the five slits. But there's the sixth sense, which is intuition, the seventh sense, which is your divine connection to higher purpose. So, you know, I live that way because I think we receive, if you look at the chakra system, you know, we think of it as seven, but truly in the Vedanta, it's, you know, many, many, many feet above you, many, many, many feet below you. So there's an energy field around all of us, using oils, using light, using touch, using your voice, using music, and using, you know, all of the senses that we can discern, at least in, you know, and explain. I think it connects us to this body. And I think so many times as women, we are very disconnected from our bodies. You know, we're more likely to buy something that will help, you know, undimple our asses,
as opposed to
touching your body. Take that oil and rub. When's the last time you actually rubbed your body and you actually use, in Ayurveda, we use long, loving touches down the bone of the body and then on the joints. It's round and circular. It's done with Ayurvedic oils, but it could be rose oil to open the heart. It could be whatever you like, but touching your own feet, touching your own head in a way that's sensuous. And when you start loving and living in that way, you become so much more radiant and so much more attractive to everybody else around you, including maybe yourself. That's the biggest game in town, is how do you fall in love with yourself?
And when you first got here to this country and you had $300 in your pocket and two telephone numbers, were you able to be this joyful when you were under that kind of pressure and strain? I mean, is this just something that's so core to you, or have you learned it over time as you've kind of established yourself here?
I've made it a practice for sure, but I was born that way. I've been like that since I was a kid. My mum and dad always tell me that I've been very social, and I would always visit all the neighbors, and I would tell them stories every day and every night, and that's just part of my way of learning as well.
Because I think a lot of people would say, you know, I don't know if this is available to me. I'm under so much stress right now, and I'm going through something, and this sounds like a wonderful way of being, but what do you say to someone who's just like, I don't think I have time for this. I don't think I have time to lavish that kind of care and attention on myself.
Yeah. You know, I serve at a sober facility every week, and I see the very best and the very strangest of things in that world. I see people that have become disenfranchised and certainly don't know what that means. And if I say to them, well, you know, you have to touch yourself and do these things and have these practices, I'll get a lot of cocked eyebrows for sure. But I think that, you know, that there is a path. You have to figure out what's right for you and tune into the frequency of what works for you. And if that means that I will stop and listen a little easier, that I'll actually make, even if it's 2 minutes of time. I had a practice for some of the young girls that I was working with. You know, everybody has to brush their teeth every day. You have to brush your hair every day, at least I hope you do. So take that moment to look into your eyes. And instead of looking at the crinkles or the wrinkles or the stuff that's not cute or you might want to criticize, just say, I am beautiful. I am aware. I am present, right? Those three, that takes no more than 10 seconds to do. And you've already changed, I think, possibly the whole atomic structure of what you want to even hear. It's not easy, but I think we're very well versed in making things more difficult than they need to be. So choose joy.
Such beautiful advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you, Donna. And everyone, you can find those sleep meditations at sleepmeditations.com and connect with us at eTurns Podcast.